This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're going to have a good time, I guarantee. We'll be doing another one of our book shows. Philip Graham, Tonya Lasakos is here. They'll tell us about some of the books they've been reading and perhaps introduce you to something new that you hadn't been aware of. If there's a book you'd like to recommend, you can call and do that too. And, of course, throughout the morning, we'll be asking for your support for the station. Real quick, what we want to do is check with Craig Cohen, host of Morning Edition in Pledge Central, because we'd just like to make sure that people know that you were working on a big goal this morning, a big challenge, and you made it.
Absolutely. Our goal was to reach $60,000 by 10 o'clock. We are currently at $60,171. I want to just do there's some celebration here for that. In the meantime, I also want to do some quick math to let you know that, of course, our goal for the day is to raise $13,000 additional dollars from where we started early this morning. We've already raised $8,661 toward that $13,000. So we're getting close to the $9,000 mark.
Okay, that's great. Well, we'll see if we can get people jazzed this morning here on Focus 580, because we're doing something that we like to call Crazy Dave and Jack's Big Book Giveaway. And here's the way it works, and we're just going to try to make it as confusing as possible. Okay, anyone who calls in and pledges $40 or more during Focus 580 today, we will send you a book from our extensive collection. And believe you me, we get lots of them, tons of them every week. And you can have a choice. Either you can have a hardcover nonfiction book or a hardcover fiction book. Now, we also do have a number of paperback titles, and there what we'll do is we'll send you two, and this may be a mix, and what we'll have to do is you'll have to rely on us to choose the book for you. We cannot give you a list of titles. We can't give you that kind of choice because we just have too many. However, our producers, Harriet and Jack, will select the books that we think are the best in the bunch, and then we'll send them right out to everybody who pledges during Focus this morning. So, if you've been thinking about it, if you've just been waiting for this day, now is the time. Please do, if you're not a supporter of the station, please do give us a call and make a pledge. 244-9455, that's the number, and we will send you a book and or books. We're also happy to have back here on the program, once again, a couple of good friends of ours. Philip Graham, who's a writer and teaches writing at University of Illinois. Tonya Lasakos from Pages for All Ages Bookstore. A couple of real book lovers, if they're ever was ones.
Oh, we love them, love them.
They love them. And Tonya, obviously because of her work, sees all kinds of new books. And Philip, being a writer, is very interested in books and seeing what other writers do. He and his family, big-time readers there in their household. So when we do this program, what they do is they bring big tote bags full of books, things that they think are interesting, to suggest them to you. We talk a little bit about the books. So then if that sounds good to you, well, you head down to the bookstore and find the book. Also, what you can do is if there's something that you've read lately that you thought was particularly good and you'd like to recommend, that would be great too. Or maybe you're also looking for a particular thing. Between the two of them, they might be able to suggest a title or an author. This gets to be a little bit harder, but I know between the two of them, they know a lot of books. So yeah, that's another thing, too. What we'd like to do is get people involved in the show so you can call us. And if you do that, of course, you'll come right here to this program. No one will expect you to pledge. We hope you will. Of course, it's not required. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana, folks. Also, we have a toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, we'll pay for it. 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you
Glad
for having
you,
us.
You're here.
Always great.
Who would like to go first? So, Tonya, you'll go first because you weren't here last
time. Okay,
yeah.
I'll go first. First book I'd like to talk about is called Norwegian Wood, like the Beatles song, and it's by Haruki Murakami, who wrote The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, which is a pretty famous one, and Philip was just telling me that the very best one,
it called? Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World. Everybody I recommend that book to comes back and shakes my hand and thanks me for recommending it.
So see, I have to read that one now.
It's really a great book.
But this is his first novel, and it takes place in Tokyo in 1969 among a few college students. Toru Watanabe is the main character, and he's a very serious young man. He's in his early 20s. And he's a really voracious reader. So there's all kinds of funny little interesting literary references throughout the book. a lot of humor in it, but there's also a lot of sad things. He and one of his good friends, Naoko, share the loss of their best friend, Kazuki. He died when he was pretty young, and Naoko is the girlfriend of Kazuki. But with Kazuki gone, Toru and Naoko develop a relationship, a really serious one. But she can't really handle things and is having trouble with the death, and so she goes away to a hospital, a mental hospital, but it's a very modern facility, mm-hmm. And really sort of free and helpful, very positive place for her to be. And meanwhile, while she's there, Toru meets Midori, who is wild and crazy and lots of fun. And he's very serious, and people always comment on the way he talks. And this is what happens when he first meets Midori in a restaurant. He's in a few classes with her, and he sees her in a restaurant. And she comes to him, and she says, "You enjoy solitude?" she asked, leaning her cheek on her hand. "Traveling alone, eating alone, sitting off by yourself in lecture halls? Nobody likes being alone that much. I don't go out of my way to make friends, that's all. It just leads to disappointment." The tip of one earpiece in her mouth, sunglasses dangling down, she mumbled, "Nobody likes being alone. I just hate to be disappointed. You can use that line if you ever write your autobiography." "Thanks," I said. "Do you like green?" "Why do you ask?" "You're wearing a green polo shirt." "Not especially. I'll wear anything." "Not especially. I'll wear anything. I love the way you talk, like spreading plaster nice and smooth. Has anybody ever told you that?" "Nobody," I say. "My name's Midori," she said. "Green. But green looks terrible on me. Weird, huh? It's like I'm cursed, don't you think? My sister's name is Momoko. Peach girl." "And does she look good in pink?" "She looks great in pink. She was born to wear pink. It's totally unfair." The food arrived at Midori's table, and a guy in a Madras jacket called out to her, "Hey, Midori, come and get it." She waved at him as if to say, "I know." "Say, tell me," she said, "do you take lecture notes in drama?" "Sure do." "I hate to ask, but could I borrow your notes? I've missed twice, and I don't know anybody in the class." "No problem," I said, and pulled the notebook from my bag. After checking to make sure I hadn't written anything in it I didn't want seen, I handed it to Midori. "Thanks," she said. "Are you coming to school the day after tomorrow?" "Sure am. Meet me here at noon. I'll give you back your notebook and buy you lunch. I mean, it's not like you get an upset stomach or anything if you don't eat alone, right?" "No way," I said, "but you don't have to buy me lunch just because I'm lending you my notebook." "Don't worry," she said. "I like to buy people lunch. But anyhow, shouldn't you write it down somewhere? You won't forget?" "I won't forget. Day after tomorrow, 12 o'clock. Midori. Green." From the other table, somebody called out, "Hurry up, Midori, your food's getting cold." She ignored the call and asked me, "Have you always talked like that?" "I think so," I said. "Never noticed before. And in fact, no one had ever told me there was anything unusual about the way I spoke." And he has all kinds of funny little things. The title Norwegian Wood comes from the fact that one of the women, Reiko, at this mental hospital where Naoko is staying, she plays the guitar a lot. Hmm. And she plays lots of 1960s songs, and Norwegian Wood is one of their favorites. There's also all kinds of little interesting, clever characters like Stormtrooper, who is his roommate, who is this sort of military young man, and he does radio calisthenics in the morning, and it drives Toru absolutely crazy. But he makes him a neat person, makes him clean. Okay. And it's just a fun book. It's real fun.
And this is, again, the title of the book is Norwegian Wood. Murakami, Murakami, is the author. Do you know, is this something that was written in Japanese and translated into English?
I believe it was translated, yeah.
I think he helps with his translations now because he's translated actually a lot of American literature into Japanese.
Into Japanese, yeah. Interesting to see what the culture was like in Japan at that time and to see what Japanese college students were doing, you know.
Yeah.
During those years.
Oh, yeah. Well, Murakami actually is considered, or was, the sort of the voice of his generation. That book, as I remember reading, was sold like over 2 million copies. Oh. And it was his first novel. I think it was his first novel.
And when was this published?
Paperback edition. Well, paperback edition 2000. Let's see. Originally published in Japan, 1987. That's got to be the paperback. So I would say the hardcover was probably quite a bit before that.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we have a caller, and why don't we go to them so we don't make them wait, and then we'll come back and Philip will take his first turn. Let's talk with someone here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I would like to have some suggestions for books on tape for a 90-year-old relative who gets tapes from a state library in another state, but says she's never heard of any of the authors that she's given choices of, and she can't see very well, so books on tape are all that she can get in the way of books. So do you have any suggestions for something that might please an elderly relative who doesn't like a lot of violence, and sex is okay as long as it doesn't go on and on and on and on and on?
Uh-huh. I can tell you there are so many books on tapes, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I'm not too much of a listener myself. I'm really more of a reader, but just about everything that gets any kind of popularity or publicity at all, they eventually put it on tape. You can get all kinds of classics.
I was just wondering if you had some that were had anything in mind that was especially well done.
Does she like mysteries, or is there something in particular that she's real interested in? What kind of books does she generally listen to?
Oh, you know, I think she listens to all kinds of things.
Yeah. Okay.
I can actually recommend...
Barbara Kingsolver.
Maybe. I can recommend the books on tape that I actually listen to. The novel that I'm working on right now is a character who sort of discovers books on tape, so I had to do a lot of listening for these. And I'm not particularly crazy about the tapes because I usually only have a chance to listen to them when I'm driving, and the next thing I know I'm 10 miles away and a chapter away and I've missed everything and then try to, you know, rewind it and it becomes impossible for me. But there is a wonderful one that not only I enjoyed but my family enjoyed too, and that is the books on tape version of James Thurber's My Life in Hard Times.
Oh, okay.
Very, very wonderful book. I mean, I remember reading it and loving it when I was a child, and it was terrific to hear it on tape, too, because it's the kind of work that really works well with someone speaking to you. It's written in a kind of conversational voice anyway, so it's excellent for the voice.
Hmm, okay. Somebody mentioned just now Barbara Kingsolver. I just finished reading, and my husband did too, Prodigal Summer.
I haven't read that.
It's wonderful.
It's the new one. Is it good?
Yes. Again, somebody who doesn't like any sex at all wouldn't enjoy it. But the sexuality in it is from a woman's point of view, and I would say it's more of a sensuous book. But it's also about discovering sisters in unlikely places, and ecology, and set in Kentucky, and it also has to do with thinking out of the box in terms of farming in an area where farming is marginal. The chief crop in this particular area is tobacco. And there's a young woman who's suddenly on her own and has to figure out what to do with the farm. So all kinds of just very interesting things. And Kingsolver, I just enjoy everything that I've read.
Yeah, Poisonwood Bible is just phenomenal.
She just has a way with words, I find. And very interesting characters, very well-developed. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
And again, maybe also there are other folks who are listening can maybe offer a suggestion on the books on tape.
Oh, sure, please.
Matter, yeah. Because on the show here, we always also encourage people to. If there's a book that you like, you want to tell us about, that's great, but herein has a particular request, so maybe there's something that you have listened to on tape that you thought it was good that you'd like to suggest to this listener.
Oh, and if her mother likes the whole farming community kind of novel, Jane Smiley. That's good.
Yes.
Okay. And let's give, let me give the phone number again if people want to call into the show. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Our guest this morning, Philip Graham, Tony Latsakos, and we're talking about books, new books, and they have brought some to share, and maybe if there's a title you'd like to share, you can call us and do that. So, Philip, what do you got?
This is a book that I really love, and I may have in a long time ago recommended this book, but I know I have not read from it. And I've been rereading it and been impressed all over again. This is a memoir called And There Was Light by a French writer named Jacques Lusseyran, Lusseyran. And it's a memoir by a man who went blind with a childhood accident when he was 8 years old, and writes in this book that he came to believe that that accident was the best thing that ever happened to him in his life. Mm. And it's a book that talks about the mysteries and joys of not being able to see and how the world comes to you when you cannot see. Excuse me, and I'll read from this, and I'm going to have a hard time stopping, so I'm going to stop long before I want to stop, because this is such a beautifully written passage, and it goes on, I think, too long for today. A very short time after I went blind, I forgot the faces of my mother and father and the faces of most of the people I loved. From time to time, I remembered a face, but it was always that of a person I did not care about. Why did memory work that way? It was almost as if affection were not compatible with it. Could it be that affection or love puts us so close to people that we are no longer able to evoke their image? Perhaps we never see those we love, never completely, just because we love them. In the absence of their faces, I had the voices of my parents ever present in my ears, and since the accident, the shape of people and their appearance still concerned me, but in a different way. All at once I stopped caring whether people were dark or fair, with blue eyes or green. I felt that sighted people spent too much time observing these empty things. Every cliché of colloquial talk, "he inspires confidence," "he is well brought up," seemed to me superficial, the froth, but not the drink itself. For my part, I had an idea of people, an image, but not the same as the one seen by the world at large. Often I saw them in a way diametrically opposed to that of others. The furtive boy I saw as shy, and the one they called lazy I saw as struggling all day long in imagination with an ardor which was the opposite of laziness. To tell the truth, my opinions of people had become so different that I often distrusted them. I ended by feeling that I was the one who was strange. Frankly, hair, eyes, mouth, the necktie, the rings on fingers mattered very little to me. I no longer even thought about them. People no longer seemed to possess them. Sometimes in my mind men and women appeared without heads or fingers. Then again, the lady in the armchair suddenly rose before me in her bracelet and turned into the bracelet itself. There were people whose teeth seemed to fill their whole faces, and others so harmonious they seemed to be made of music. But in reality, none of these sights is made to be described. They are so mobile, so much alive, that they defy words. People were not at all what they were said to be, and never the same for more than 2 minutes at a stretch. Some were, of course, but that was a bad sign, a sign that they did not want to understand or be alive, that they were somehow caught in the glue of some indecent passion. That kind of thing I could see in them right away, because not having their faces before my eyes, I caught them off guard. People are not accustomed to this, for they only dress up for those who are looking at them. I heard my parents' voices against my ear or inside my heart, where you will, but very close, and all the other voices followed the same course. It is comparatively easy to protect ourselves from a face we dislike, sufficient to keep it at a distance, to leave it in the world outside. But only try the same thing with voices, you will never manage it. The human voice forces its way into us. It is really inside ourselves that we hear it. To hear it properly, we must allow it to vibrate in our heads and our chests, in our throats, as if for the moment it really belonged to us. That is surely the reason why voices never deceive us. I no longer saw faces and knew in all probability I should go through life without seeing them. Sometimes I should have liked to touch them when they seemed to me beautiful. But society is careful to ban such gestures. As a rule, it forbids any move which might bring human beings closer to each other. In doing so, society believes it is acting for the best, defending us against the assaults of modesty and violence. Immodesty and violence, perhaps with good reason, for men are often beasts. But how could a blind child recognize the danger? For him, such bans were impossible to explain. Nevertheless, I made the most of voices in a domain which society has never intruded upon. It is strange that when laws men make are so ticklish in matters concerning the body, they never set limits to the nakedness or contact by voice. Evidently, they leave out of account the fact that the voice can go further than hands and eyes, illicit or illicit touch.
Wow. The title is...
And There Was Light.
And There Was Light. And spell the name of the author for us.
Jacques Lusseyran, Lusseyran. Right. Now, this man became later in life, as he recounts in this book, the head of the resistance in Paris during the Nazi occupation. Mm-hmm. He was the man who was in charge of interviewing everybody who they were thinking of letting into the secret of the underground. And because he could hear voices so well, because he could not, he wouldn't be deceived by appearance, he was 100% spot on right about who was trustworthy
cool.
and who was not. Mm-hmm. He was eventually caught, and he was sent to Buchenwald, which he survived. And the experience of hearing about that particular aspect of the Holocaust from a blind person, this is really quite a remarkable book.
And again, want to make sure people understand, this is not a novel.
This is
a memoir.
This is
a real guy writing about what actually
exactly
happened.
Right. This is a memoir.
Okay.
And There Was Light.
We are talking this morning here about books with Philip Graham and Tonia Leitsakos. And we'll talk with them about some other things in a moment. One thing we want to do now, however, is take a second and talk with Maeve Riley, who is the editor of our program guide, Patterns, and she is in Pledge Central. And Maeve, I guess we want to, again, see if we can get people excited by the big book giveaway. We've done this in the past, and people have liked it. So this is a way that we can get people to go to the phone. If they've been thinking about making a pledge and just haven't gotten around to it, well, now is the time.
Now is definitely the time to do so, David. Anyone who pledges $40 or more during Focus this morning will be sent a book from the extensive collection of Focus 580. And if you've ever walked by David's space where David and Jack Brighton sit, it is packed to the gills with books, books, books. And now we're going to give some of them away. And if you call, you can pick a hardcover nonfiction, a hardcover fiction, or two paperback books. We're not going to let you pick exactly which hardcover fiction or nonfiction book. David and Jack will select what you get. But it's a great offer. The phones are open, so call now, 217-244-9455. You might consider making a pledge at the $75 level to get our member card, which is 2-for-1 entrees at some local area restaurants. And you can take your book with you and a friend to eat, and you can both sit there and read and get a free meal, too. So call now.
And we hope that you would do it not only for the book and for the dinner,
yes.
but
to support
the dinner.
Right.
So you come away with that feeling that says, yes, I did my bit. Because, you know, this place, it's a very special kind of deal, public broadcasting. We are supported in very large part by people who listen. You help pay the bills. You help us keep it commercial free. You make it possible for us to do the kind of things that we want to do and that you want to listen to. But that works because listeners also support the station with their dollars.
That's right.
And it's real easy. It's not the kind of thing that's going to take a lot of time. It's not that complicated. And if you haven't done it yet, we're kind of coming down here to
yes.
the end of this spring fundraising effort, and we are now raising the money that we will spend on programs for next year. So that's why it's very important that we try to stay on track and meet the various goals that we have set all the way along.
Yes, and today, by noon, we'd like to get to $65,000, and we're just over $60,000. So we have a way to go, but to keep us on track, we need to get the phones ringing now, 217-244-9455.
And again, if you make a pledge of $40 or more, that's our basic membership level, you will get a year subscription to Patterns Magazine.
That's right.
That's one of the things that it comes with that. And then we will send you a book. You can have nonfiction or fiction. You can have a hardcover, or if you would like to have a book in softcover, we'll send you two. We will make the choices. You'll have to leave that up to us, but we promise you it'll be something good. So give us a call and make a pledge. And as Maeve said, if you can make a pledge at the $75 level or above, we do have this new member card, mm-hmm. and we think that's a pretty nice deal, so that you can take that in at a number of restaurants in our listening area, really all over the state, the central part of the state. You can go there and buy two dinners, and the lesser one essentially is on us.
Hey, David, I have to jump in real quick
sure.
and thank Great Harvest for a snack today that they provided for our volunteers here. So thank you to Great Harvest, and join Great Harvest in supporting fine public broadcasting here by calling 217-244-9455.
Very good. Thank you, ma'am. We have a caller here into the program, and again, I want to tell people who are listening that if you would like to call in and talk with our guests, Philip and Tonia, maybe you have a book that you would like to recommend, or you have some kind of question, maybe you're looking for something, they may be able to suggest a title to you. All you have to do is call us. The regular number for the show, that hasn't changed. It's what is that number? It's 333. There are just too many numbers. 333-9455. That's as always. And we do also have the toll-free 800-222-9455. You'll come right here to the show. Well, we have a caller here. Let's go again and talk with him in Urbana. Line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi.
And also, Professor Graham, thanks for the reading.
Welcome.
And I want to recommend a book. It's titled "Treason by the Book."
Jonathan Spence.
Jonathan Spence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard of this.
It's a history book, but it reads better than novel.
Pardon me for interrupting. I'm just saying that he's a great writer. Mm-hmm. We should have more historians that can write like that.
Yeah. I know you're interested in fiction. Me too. But I seem to lately find that more and more there's in nonfiction. There's lots of time. There's stories that's better than fiction. That I guess just say life is more interesting than.
You cut me to the quick.
Philip's a novelist, you know, so he's very sensitive about things like that.
Thank you very much. I'll hang
out. Okay. Well, again, an excellent suggestion. Spence is a historian of China. Mm-hmm. He is not Chinese. He teaches at Yale. And he's written a number of books, all of them very, very good, about both ancient and modern Chinese history. And this is his newest book. And I've had the chance to talk with him a couple times. He's a very gracious man and a great writer.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in learning about China, either ancient China or modern China, he's the guy to go to.
I've read a couple of them. The Woman Wang is a terrific book. They really do read like novels.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely an excellent suggestion. He's a fine writer. In fact, Celeste and I were talking about this last night, and initially I thought. We sort of thought about having him on the show, and I was thinking that it's possible that it might be just a little bit too, I don't know, esoteric. But now I think Celeste is thinking maybe she's going to try to have him on. So he may be on WILL. Yeah. So thanks very much for the suggestion. Very good writer. Who's up next? Oh, Tanya's up next.
Yes.
Okay. My Russian by Deidre McNamer. This is some beautiful writing. Hmm. You just eat every word. I remember you saying last time, I don't remember what book you were talking about, but you were saying that before you went to bed at night, you kissed it. You kissed the book.
That was Franca Spahn. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the way I just devoured every word.
The cover has lip marks all over it. Yes.
Ooh, how does Alma feel about this? We'll talk later.
Anyway, she's married to a man who's just been shot. Her name is Francesca. But it doesn't stay that way long. Mm. You don't know who shot him. There are a few suspects. One is a kid that kind of hangs around their house a little bit, a teenage kid who's friends with her son. And one of the main suspects, really, though, is Yuri, who is her Russian gardener, who she's been having an affair with for some time and who she's very much in love with. She goes on vacation to Greece, and all of the parts about Greece.
Yes.
Oh, they're so beautiful and so accurate, and she just has a lovely style. She goes there to spy on what she calls her waiting life. She goes there and changes her identity, and it's funny, all these little things that she does to get passports with a different name on them, and you know, dyes her hair and basically changes her whole identity, and comes back from Greece early to spy around her hometown on her waiting life, her family, her husband, and nobody ever recognizes her because she's changed so much. But while she's in Greece, lots of interesting things happen, and this is just some description that I just can't tell you how beautiful it is, so I'll read a little. In Greece, the day before I left for home in disguise, I picked my way down the lime-washed steps to the square in the late afternoon. Four black cats with green eyes watched me from a porch so white it hurt. A large woman in a pink dress sat alone in the shade of an acanthus, a splayed hand on each large knee. The bus stopped near her and let off a young mother and two bedraggled kids before gunning off in the direction of the ferry port on the island's dry side. Shutters were closed. It was the afternoon sleeping time, but the heat felt tolerable, and I was hatted and sunblocked, so I started walking toward the sea. I followed the same road I'd taken the day before when I had buried my knapsack by the water. The pavement is flanked with honeysuckle bushes, and the smell of them mingles with the wiry, sun-baked thyme in a heady, honey, camphoric blend. And then the light, of course. Who doesn't talk about the light? What it is just an absence of moisture, of complexity, of interference. It comes to you weightless and straight. Hang a musty towel in that light, that herby wind, and it comes back sterilized. The road descends gently, then climbs again. A dirt track branches off it in the direction of the cliffside and the pretty cove I had found, but I stayed on the pavement. It made a long turn around the side of a hill, and then I saw the Castro, the chalky fort town, a warren of stone on a promontory above the sea. You approach the walled town from the back, the land-facing side, and climb a long flight of outside stairs, then duck under a low arch into the interior. It's as if you've entered a seashell or a bleached skull, a bleached skull the way it ought to look, not an empty space, but with the skeleton of a brain, all corridors and hidden rooms. Bone chalk, silence, hot white corridors where everything seemed that afternoon to sleep. On a long wall, in a square of shade, a cat stretched out like something spilt. The corridors are about as wide as a sidewalk. The archway is just a few inches higher than my head. The entire town is smaller than a city block. Lidless sarcophagi, small bathtubs with blurred reliefs, sit here and there as casual as park benches. The whole place is lidless but hidden, like an open-eyed person in a trance. When I was 12, I saw some paintings in a book and began to have mausoleum dreams. Tall white marble against an orchid sky. Something about that terrified me and seemed to trigger thoughts that ran away with themselves. In the Castro, there seemed not to be a single human, though from behind one set of shutters came the smell of baking cookies, a mother baking treats for her napping children to have when they woke. The Castro, a skull. My skull. I think that it may somehow contain the whole story. Beautiful writing. And there's all kinds of, I mean, every passage is this way, and it really gives you the feeling of grace. My reading group read it, and we decided that the story is good but not great, but it's worth reading twice just for the writing.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Very beautiful.
But it's also a murder mystery, and it has quite a shocking end. I think only one of us had figured it out.
Okay. Yeah. The title of the book is My Russian, and what's the author again?
Deidre McNamer, McNamer.
Okay. Very good. Well, Philip, you want to do another one?
Sure. From beautiful writing to beautiful writing, why not? I have a book that I really adore and greatly for the language as well. this is a novel, surprise, surprise, by a Portuguese-American writer. We're back to that again. Sorry, it's just
predictable. Are you speaking
muito
Portuguese,
bem.
Portuguese fluently now?
No, not at all. But I'm learning how to give directions on streets. This is by Catherine Vaz, V-A-Z, and it's a novel called Saudade, which is a Portuguese word that is hard to describe, impossible really to describe in English. In the back of the book it says, a Portuguese word, saudade is a Portuguese word considered untranslatable. One definition, yearning so intense for those who are missing or for vanished times and places that their absence is the most profound presence in one's life, a state of being rather than merely a sentiment. And it's the story of Clara, who was born in the Azores, and she's born without being able to speak. And while she's living on this island, she meets a neighbor, Maria Josefa, who helps her learn how to speak by making little pictures with sugar. They'll pour some sugar on a table, and then they'll, with their fingers, make pictures that will begin to mean things. After that, speaking with sugar seemed so easy. Desiring to understand each other was all it took to learn it. That Maria Josefa wondered why no one had thought of it before. She and Clara got together for sugar speaking every morning, and they conceived many other sugar phrases that were soon adopted by the rest of the village of Agualva, including a mound of sugar with a thumbprint in the center equals you may rest here. A pinch of sugar tossed in the air equals welcome, or sometimes what a nice dress. Salt mixed with sugar on the tongue equals I'm so hungry, plus gesture to stomach, or I'm so thirsty, plus gesture to throat, or I'm so sad, gesture to heart. Sugar stamped underfoot equals no, or I don't know, or you're as stubborn as a tar stain, or you're as stubborn as all the other Alguavanes in this village. Sprinkling on the speaker's head equals come kiss me. Sugar dissolved in water equals he, she, it drowned, or he, she, it died. Some words were padded into rough shapes with sugar. Cat, cow, eggs, boat, ferns, lava, wine, lobsters, America, Virgin Mary. The nice thing about sugar pictures was that they retained the essence of the words they had been, even after being frugally scraped back into their containers, where they intersected other sugar pictures, so that when used in cooking, within flans and cakes, or suspended in coffee, there drifted lobster cats, wine-filled ferns, the Virgin piloting boats to the New World.
Ooh, that's very, very nice. Okay. You'll have to spell that. I know you want to read some more. I was going to say, when we finish this, you'll need to spell the title because not. It's if you know Portuguese, you get it. But otherwise,
V-A-Z. Her last name is simply V-A-Z. Okay. Now, the thing is that so much of this book is about seeing. You know, Clara eventually learns how to speak, but there are all kinds of other communication problems that she has. And she eventually meets a man named Helio, who is very, very sensitive to the kind of person she is. And they're doing all sorts of things. He draws pictures and colors, and he actually learns how to write words and translate them into colors so that she can read the colors and therefore read the words and so forth. And they also begin to do something where they take Clara makes pictures out of the scales of fish. And she uses these to make what are called morte macaca, or monkey death pictures. Now, monkey death picture is a picture that is a way of kind of holding off fate, okay? In other words, if you don't want something bad to happen to you, you make a monkey death picture. To work properly, the death depicted had to be an instance of yammering nonsense so that the creatures could say in fright, "Look at the troubles near Clara and Helio. Let's go. We've got no work to do here." Only a bizarre way of dying counted as a monkey death, something that suggested the screech of angry animals. Dying of old age was not a monkey death, but being torched by firecrackers was. And so here's one of the monkey death pictures, which always comes a little explanation of the picture. And actually, the villagers come to get these monkey death pictures of people who they know who have died in particular strange ways. And this is from a sea voyage, the whalers of the Azores. During a sea voyage, Eduardo's crew fastened a whale's jaw and the attached spine to the stern. Eduardo climbed inside the skeleton to go surfing. He wanted to be Jonah, but with a better view. Gripping the bones over his head, he rowed with a glad holler until the rocking boat swiveled the cage and trapped him inside. Before he could be rescued, a whalebone harpooned him. The men worked frantically, but the sharks tore Eduardo into nothing but a skeleton himself. He was left as a wind chime inside the empty animal.
Yeah. Wow.
And this entire book is like this. It never stops. It's as luscious as you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. A truly visionary novel. Saudade, Saudade, by Catherine Vaz, or Vaz, V-A-Z.
Yeah. Okay.
It's available in paperback.
Wow, that's amazing stuff. Yeah. That's really amazing stuff. We have in this, maybe about another 5 minutes in this first hour, Focus 580, but Philip and Tanya, I want to make sure people listening know, are going to stick around for the second hour, so we'll be able to do some more. But I also want to make sure that people listening know that if you want to call in, if you have a question about something we've talked about, if you have some other kind of question, if you want to recommend a book yourself, that's great. We're always happy to hear from folks on the show. Here on Focus, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. That's the number to call into this show. Again, nobody is going to grab you on the way to shake you down. We would, of course, like it for people to pledge, but you don't have to do that to call into the show. Tanya.
All right. Gosh, which one? This one. Okay. This is a young adult novel called Dovey Coe, C-O-E. It's this young girl's name. She's about 11. And they live in North Carolina in Indian Creek. And she has a sister named Caroline, who's just the beautiful sister. Everyone loves her, and she's perfect in every way. And Dovey Coe is sort of a tomboy and doesn't get nearly as much attention from people. But it's been a while since I've been so enchanted by a character. She has this simplicity and this honesty about her. And she's also very funny. This is when she's talking about the pigs. The problem started up when I become friendly with the pigs, giving them the names of Henrietta, Scarlet, King Edward, and Ralph. Anyone raising livestock to butcher will tell you that was a grave mistake on my part. Don't name anything you or someone else, say your daddy, aims to kill. You can get right attached to an animal, especially if it's a pig. Pigs are right smart, smarter than dogs, some will say. They come when you call them and will learn to do tricks easy. King Edward was especially gifted in this regard. I'm also of the belief that pigs can understand most everything you say once you talk to them a while and they get a chance to learn your language. I got the idea in my head that I would have me a pig circus and charge folks a dime to see it. I figured I'd keep half the money I made for myself and give the other half to Mama for her to buy material for a new dress, which she'd been badly in need of for some time. I even come up with a plan to ask Mama for her old sewing scraps so I could make some pig costumes with little sparklies all over them. One night at dinner, I decided to tell Mama and Daddy of my idea, thinking they'd be real taken by it. Well, the first thing Daddy done once he stopped laughing was say, "When you aim to put this circus on, you best do it before first frost, 'cause them pigs will be gone to slaughter once it turns cold." Now, I guess I known them pigs would be butchered sooner or later, but I reckon I kept that bit of knowledge way in the back of my head where I wouldn't come across it. I started to thinking on the fact that King Edward, Scarlet, and all the rest would be on the breakfast table before too long, and the thought was like to tear me apart. I could see their little eyes, which weren't at all beady like some folks will tell you, and the way they ran on their little pig feet to greet me when I come to the barn of a morning. "Daddy," I said to him, "I reckon we ought not to kill them pigs. I've been working them so hard, their meat's bound to be all tough on the inside. I don't believe they's good eating pigs anymore." Daddy leaned back in his chair, his eyes lit up by merriment. "What you reckon we ought to do with them pigs then, sister? I can't afford to feed any stock that ain't producing for us." "I'm telling you, Daddy, that circus will make us a lot of money." Daddy nodded his head, giving the matter some thought. "How many times you figure folks will spend a dime to see a pig jump through a hoop? I suspect a man sees that once, he'll be satisfied the rest of his days that he's seen it enough." Daddy had a point there, but I weren't ready to give up easy. "We could train them to hunt fancy mushrooms. I hear folks up north will pay a lot of money for such things." "Sister, you do take all," Daddy laughed. "No, I suspect them pigs will be bacon come fall." That ended the matter for the time being, but I went on to argue for the pigs whenever I took a mind to. Of course, it was too late for Henrietta, Scarlet, King Edward, and Ralph. All I can say is that I ain't eaten bacon since, though I do find it difficult to pass up a piece of ham. I never got too upset about Mama killing the chickens, I admit. It's hard to build up a head of steam for a chicken.
Very nice.
Isn't that cute? Well, the catch is she's accused of murdering Parnell, who is the... I know, can you believe it? Huh. It's a murder mystery. Goodness. She's accused of murdering Parnell, who is the young man who is just completely smitten with her sister, the lovely Caroline. But he sort of demeans her a little bit at their engagement party. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of suspects. One is Caroline herself. One is Amos, who is the brother, and he doesn't speak. And he spends a lot of time with his dogs, and he's a little bit developmentally disabled, and people give him a real hard time. And he's very protective of Caroline. So people think maybe it could be him, but also Dovey, because of jealousy.
All right. And I don't think, did we mention the author?
Oh, I'm sorry. Frances O'Rourke Dowell.
Okay. Well... we are about at the point where we can take a little break. However, before we do that, and we promise there will be more books, there'll be more reading, and Tanya and Philip, we're going to hang around for the next part of the show. However, before we do that, we would just like to give you another opportunity to have a book. If there's one thing that we believe in on this show... it's reading and writing. We're very high on writers and books. And because of that, we would like to spread the wealth around. We have a lot of books. Many books come to us. Publishers send them to us in the hopes that we would interview the authors, or maybe they think we would review them, or they would get some mention in the book. And we collect them. Sometimes we give them away to people who work with us. And sometimes we say, hey, we'd like to share these with the listeners. So it's what we call Crazy Jack and Dave's big book giveaway. Why? Because we're just crazy.
That's right.
That's the only way we can explain it. And Jack Brighton is here in the studio with us.
Do I have the right microphone?
No. Well, Oh, it seems like it's cutting in and out. Maybe there's something wrong with the microphone.
I'll just borrow Phillips.
Oh,
there we go.
There you go.
Please save us from these books. We've got so darn many books. They're about to, if there's an earthquake, we're in danger. And so take them off our hands and help support public broadcasting at the same time. You can do that by making a pledge of $40 or more. We'll send you your choice, fiction, nonfiction hardcover, either one of those, or we'll send you two paperback books, probably one fiction, one nonfiction. We're not sure. We got so many books that it's kind of hard to keep track, but they're going to be good books. These are not like little chintzy little paperbacks. These are, a lot of them are actually large format paperbacks. So you'll enjoy that. These are not factory seconds, folks.
These books have not been read.
That's right.
They're not pre-read. No one has looked at those words. Well, sure, we may have flipped through a little bit, but not seriously. No. You're going to be the first. And they are really, we get a lot of good things and from a lot of quality publishers and good stuff, and we would just like to be able to share them, you know. But we also are kind of hoping that people would, well, you know, make a pledge. Give us a little dough, okay? $40 or better if you can. During Focus, we really want to continue to maintain the momentum we have built up to this point, because we're just got a couple of more days here, and it's very important that we get as much money in the bank as we can.
We've got quite a head of steam going here this hour. Why don't we check with Maeve Riley, who's our pledge center. And Maeve, we've had a number of people respond to this. We'd like to hear some more, though, right?
Yeah, we've had quite a few people call in for the books, but I know there's hundreds of books left for people to get. So give us a call, 244-9455. You're supporting great programming. David and Jack bring you wonderful programming. Philip Graham, who's an author and a reader, is there. And Tanya as well, a great reader. And if you're a great reader and you want to get a good book, now's the time to get in on this. 244-9455. We'll ask for a pledge of $40. And as a thank you gift, we're not selling the books. We're just giving them to you as a thank you gift.
We'd like to sell them.
Well, yeah, we could. That would be a good fundraiser.